Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we talk with martial arts practitioners about their histories and the influence that their practice of martial arts has on their lives. You are listening to the free version of this podcast, which is abbreviated. Help support this program by considering to subscribe to us on Patreon, where you will get 4 full-length podcasts each month, 1 week before the YouTube release date. The cost is that of about 1 coffee shop coffee per month. Go to www.patreon.com/malmag to subscribe. That is www.patreon.com/malmag. If you would like to purchase single full-length episodes of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, visit our Gumroad page at malmag.gumroad.com, and that is malmag.gumroad.com. This week I sit down in Marina Del Rey with Christopher Harley. He's one of my oldest friends, so this is going to be a wild ride, folks. Sit back and enjoy. Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, and today, what can I say? Finally got someone that I've been wanting to talk to. Well, I talk to him all the time, so let's put it this way. I finally got someone here that I want to record talking to. Person who's in contest for, I think, the most shout-outs on the podcast so far, and I don't even know where to begin other than his name. Welcome, Christopher Harley, to the podcast. One of my best friends in the world, I have to say, and certainly one of the people who is got a very good constitution in that he's put up with me for a long time on a personal level and training level, and I think that should get anyone an award.
It's never been putting up with. I mean, okay, there might have been a few times, like, seriously, dude. You were supposed to be here 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But it's okay, because we're going to train for 3 hours, so it doesn't really matter.
Right. Right.
That's about the extent of it. Well, thanks for having me on. It's really a pleasure to be here, and I'm glad that I can finally put to rest some of the mythos of who's this Chris Harley guy that keeps getting mentioned. For anyone listening, if I've gotten a lot of mentions, it's just because I get around a lot, so I know a lot of people, and I'm fortunate enough to know a lot of really, really good people, and consider them friends, and so it's my quantity, not the audience's quality.
Yeah. Well, and we run in a lot of the same circles, so that's the pool I've been grabbing from for the most part as well for the show so far, so it's certainly worked out that way, which is, a combination of all those things, and so therefore people mention Chris Harley a bit.
It happens.
Well, shoot, I don't even know where to begin with you. You and I met in the early 2000s at the Unisanto Academy. It was certainly when they, I think, first came to the location that they're at now. Because I know they've been there since 2004, and I want to say that that's about around when I came there. And I think we both sort of had the same sort of happy accidents of being in the same classes with the same people and kind of picking up on the same things and became a familiar face to one another. Like, hey, you got a partner? No. You got a partner? No. Hey, you want to do something after class? Hey, grab a coffee? Yeah. And then you want to train some more? And it kind of worked out. And then here we are about 20 years later.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing was that we had the same schedule, basically. We both, I was doing body work. Most of my clients were nighttimes and weekends. You were doing your editing stuff, and you were working nights. So there weren't a lot of people that consistently had their days free. And so it was sort of happy accident that we got along. Happy, really nice that attributes-wise, completely different. So there wasn't going to be the competition there. It was just going to be like, okay, here's what. If you're going to make that work with me, you're going to have to do this. If you're going to make that work with me, you're going to have to do this. Oh, okay, So it was very complimentary all the way across the board, I thought.
Yeah, and I think that's something, certainly, I hope we dig into in our conversation, is the idea of complimentary training, doing training partners, and the value of a good training partner, and so on and so forth. But I have to warn you folks that Chris and I, when we get going, it goes where it goes as far as conversation. So we can promise something now, but I can't.
It'll often circle back around, but it takes about 3 hours.
That's true. So that this may be a little longer podcast. Well, there you go. But let's kind of start with maybe how you got involved in martial art, because that's usually where I start with everyone, and that, you know, give us a little of your history in that way.
My introduction to this family of martial art, well, my very first introduction to martial art was at summer camp, where I learned probably to this day the most important move, technique ever. And I was taking a judo class. I was like 8, maybe 10 years old. And the first thing that the teacher did on the first day was line us up across from each other and say, okay, so I'm going to show you, hands down, of anything I show you, this is the most important. So we're all really paying attention. It's like, okay, on this side, put your hand out. Okay, other side, put your hand out. Okay, now put your hands together. Now shake your hands and say your name. Look the other person in the eye, shake hands and say your name. You know, and it didn't hit super hard at the time, but it did sort of have a feeling to it. And definitely to this day, that is, you know, if you want to think about different ways to apply what we learn in martial art, that is a practical application.
Oh my
that
God.
That is martial art for the street in a very basic way.
Jeez, what do we all have in there? I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that simple thing. There is communication just in general, right? There is a respect or courtesy for acknowledgement of another human being. There is, hopefully, if you're talking about a handshake and looking someone in the eye, there's a level of confidence that if there is an issue, maybe there isn't now, because you're not a victim in your posture in that. I don't know, what else?
I mean, in that specific context, there's the added layer of acknowledging that we're about to do a thing together.
Yeah.
That this is a we project.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that have come up over the years that have really come through are things like, it takes a certain self-confidence to share yourself like that.
Right.
That there's a lot of communication happening, like you already said, but that can hold people back, and to be given an instruction and permission that, like, hey, you deserve to be seen as well.
Right.
And having that be mutual. There's the silliness of it.
Right.
Right? That actually kind of breaks down and breaks through a lot of the mystique and seriousness of martial art.
Right.
And that we're all kind of, you know, doing our best as we go through life, and no one's really better than anybody, and there's a ton. There's always lessons with that one. So
yeah.
So jump ahead. I had some other experiences, but to the family of martial arts that we're in, I was introduced to that at a place called Tom Brown Jr.'s Tracking Awareness and Wilderness Survival School. And there's a bunch of different types of classes you can take at that school. And once you've gotten enough of them under your belt of certain kinds, you can take the scout class. So Tom Brown Jr.'s teacher was an Apache scout, and that's really the big package that everything's in. It gets kind of put into smaller packages around. So that's, for a lot of people, that's like, when I first read his first book, right, and then I found out that there was a school, I was like, I want to do the scout thing. That's so cool. I was 15.
Nice.
14 when I read it, 15 when I first started learning from him. I think that's right. Or it's 15, 16, something like that. So anyway, finally made it to the scout class. It took a really long time. I had all kinds of weird delays. And when I got there, there were five people teaching the martial art component that was done in the morning. Really, I mean, partly to give some combative background so that people had that. I mean, scouts were capable of taking care of themselves and others pretty legendarily, but in a very no-nonsense way. So you don't want to go that far with it in that kind of class.
Right.
But you definitely need to, you're not getting any sleep. You know, it's all, you're going out on raids and you're, you know, basically playing fancy nighttime tag. It's awesome. It's tons of fun. while being hunted and people trying to tag you. etc. And by tag, it's, you know, a red magic marker across the throat that you didn't know was coming, and then you're,
yay,
that kind of stuff. Anyway, the four from this family were Paul Bonner, who's from Canada, and then three folks from MKG: George Larson, Vanessa Herbst, and Atticus Todd. And then there was also Joe Lau, who is from, he's got a Bujinkan lineage through Jack Hoban.
Mm.
So they taught the martial art components. And then George, Vanessa, and Paul did a week-long immersion into an expansion of the martial art that we learned in the scout class. So took the scout, was immediately completely hooked. I was like, oh, this is the martial art. This is what I've always wanted, you know, never really found when I've looked at other times for martial art stuff. I believe the big eye-opener was at the very, very end. George showed, like, so here's all these answers we talked about, but, you know, someone's punching at you, and he just puts his hand on the top of his head with his elbow out in front, and boom, punch right into the elbow.
Oh,
I was like,
Seiko destruction.
Yeah, man. I was like, uh-huh. Yeah, why are we messing? Okay, I was already in, but now I'm really in.
There's a funny thing about that with me, too, when I started to learn those kinds of destructions, because I don't know how much experience we get into that you've had with, like, karate or any other martial art, right? And you get in and you spar, and you accidentally kick someone in the elbow. And then they go, oh, sorry, and you stumble around for it. Like, yeah, yeah, I'm okay. You never put it together like, that's a good technique.
I'll often say to people, especially if they're, like, students who are relatively, you know, recent, either to, maybe they've been training other stuff, but to, like, what we've been doing, it'll be easy for them to get down on themselves. They're like, ah, and I was like, look, a huge part of what we're doing here is learning how to do on purpose,
right,
what we keep doing on accident.
<That's right>.
And not do it on accident to people we care about.
Right, exactly.
Which there's a whole bunch of lessons there. Anyway, so I started doing those week-long intensives for a number of years. I went to...
Now, question, where were you living at the time? You're from Oakland.
I'm from Oakland, California,
so
born and raised.
So you were living in Oakland, and the camps were at East Coast?
The camps were in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey.
Okay. And then the people we're talking about, Atticus, Vanessa, George, are based out of Minneapolis.
Right.
So we're talking about very spread out geographical locations.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So
back to
as was hinted at, I went to summer camp pretty young. I just happened to have a camp that I could go to that you could be relatively, I think six was the youngest. And that's not super common for other camps. And I would always be gone all summer. I would always be off doing stuff. So the idea of traveling around to go do what I was interested in was heavily supported and reinforced my whole life. So I had just finished college. I did scout class that summer. Then I did, graduated U of O. Just in case anyone cares, and well,
oh,
and,
whatever,
and was really lucky to go there because what I wanted to be since I was little, also around the time that I could understand that I still had the magical thinking of TV's real, so the $6 Million Man was
yes.
So I wanted to be bionic.
Oh yeah.
And then that same period, I also learned no, TV's not real, and I learned that he had had that. That Lee Majors had a little bit of stunt background. You know, at the time, I also thought that like Burt Reynolds was cool, and he'd had some stunt background.
Yeah, was a football player.
Yeah. So it shifted from being bionic, the fantasy, to stunt work is the thing you can do. So I'd always been interested in that. I ended up going to a university where you could take trampoline and springboard diving for credit.
Ooh.
So at a certain point, I did that, and then very soon after that, I was doing acrobatics 7-8 hours a week, assistant teaching, and just doing all that because that was going to be the best prep for stunt work. And then, of course, I didn't end up being a stuntman. But also around the same time that I discovered tracker school, I got a pacemaker. So I did end up bionic.
Right. Yes.
So the dream I gave up on. So the secret, everybody, is give up on your dreams.
Yeah. And they'll come back around.
And pursue another one, and you'll find other cool stuff.
That's right. But, you know, it was interesting because that was something I never knew about your background. I mean, I knew before you told me here, obviously, because you are the one who actually taught me how to roll properly. I mean, I've had a few lessons in it, but you're the one that really took the time and worked with me with it, and that in and of itself has probably saved me major bodily damage twice that I can remember of.
I mean, if there's, again, I'm talking about the practical aspect of martial art. Being comfortable on the ground, being comfortable with going down to the ground and getting back up, that's literally life-saving into your 90s.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that is the stuff that's really going to matter. And yet it gets so heavily overlooked. Right. And then also for bigger guys like yourself, going down is a little different than it is for smaller people.
Right.
You know, it's just, that's a lot more force.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't know how to absorb it or even diffuse it, it's going to be a lot less fun. So, which, anyway, I eventually do, after doing a bunch of tracker stuff, that's when I decide, oh, I'm not going to move to LA and be a stuntman. I'm going to live in Tahoe and track all the time. I've done it a little bit here and there. We'll wait for this to,
yeah,
or maybe it won't matter. I'll just keep talking. Anyway, I had sort of an epiphany, a shift in perspective, where I realized, as much as I would love to do stunt work, it doesn't help anybody. I mean, it's entertaining,
right?
You know, and you're probably helping each other with, you know, and everything. But it's not. It doesn't need to be a grand purpose kind of thing. But I realized I was going to be much happier if I was doing stuff that really did actually help people. And so, at the time, I was thinking, well, there's a definite disconnection between people and that people generate. It's not a real disconnection that people generate between themselves and the rest of the world that everyone calls nature. and
I'm sorry, folks. I'm laughing because Chris and I have had this conversation about nature and natural, I don't know how many times, and so sorry, you're going to hear me break into laughter about things that we've kind of already gone over in humorous ways.
I mean, so sum up, like, what's my stance on that?
Right, everything's natural, right?
Everything is natural.
And I'll let him go into it a little more for you.
There's no such thing as not nature.
Exactly.
If it exists, I don't care what solar system it's in.
Right.
I don't care what city it's in. Like, everything's natural.
Naturally.
Some things are
yes, you do. Yeah,
some things are artificial,
right?
Because humans make tools, and that's what we do. We have artificial thought processes. We have artificial tools. We have artifice is a thing, and wild is a thing. Mm-hmm. But also, lots of wild things have artifice too. You know, bees, termites, they transform other things into other useful things,
right?
Like, and everyone, you can nitpick about scale. I don't care. I'm right. This isn't an arguable thing.
No, it's really not.
And any resistance to it is really useful because it helps you see that there's separations that you're creating in your own life that aren't serving you, and doesn't really take a lot to shift, and can get a lot of benefit. I'm not saying it's better, but it is more accurate, let's put it that way. So, anywho, I thought if I spent a lot more time in wild spaces, and particularly really developing my tracking skills, and some of my scout skills and some other stuff, and my survival skills, I'd be in the wild school, learning from a thing that can't lie. Right? Things are how they are.
Right.
There's no deception in that. And people are like, oh, well, what about camouflage? There's a way camouflage works.
Mm-hmm.
And once you understand it, it's very honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not actually a lie.
Right. It's not the same as the artifice of a lie.
Correct.
A lie is artificial.
Right.
Anyway, I'm sure a bunch of people's buttons are being pushed right now, but good. Anyway, I decide that's what I'm going to do. I end up... also trying to work my awareness skills and some of my what I'm learning in martial art.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good, all right. Well, we're recording a podcast. Let's introduce you. No, no, come on. Sorry, it's not live. No, come here. So, guys, we just had a CLOT camp, and there's a couple people here that I actually want to get on the show at some point. It's Jakob and Astrid. They're from Austria. And
hi.
Just say hi. Because we're sitting outside at the Coffee Bean, and they came walking by. Are you guys getting ready to head out?
Yeah.
We're just killing a little bit of time before we go.
All right. So they're getting ready to head back to the airport and leave us to go back to Austria.
It's always awesome to see them.
It's always awesome to see you guys. Yeah.
Thank you.
When you guys are around for a camp, the vibe is different.
Yeah.
I enjoy it more.
Yeah.
There's something you bring to it that's the... maybe it's because you guys are helping with the sales and stuff, and so more people have interaction with you, and they just kind of... people just chill a little and enjoy themselves. So.
Yeah, I've been doing so much, but if it helps a little bit, that's fine.
Hey, anything is more than nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it helps Guru also, because the camp is running more smoothly, and Guru can just teach, and no incidents, nothing, so...
Absolutely.
That's good.
Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you.
So you guys, well, here, I'll take a hug before you go. Good to see you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
And think about this. I want to put you on here if you're comfortable.
Good luck with your podcast.
Well, thank you.
Have a nice
day. All right. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Safe travels.
Bye-bye.
I was working the door at the busiest place in Tahoe City. So not like nothing rough and tumble or anything, but... good place to
dabbled in a little security.
Yeah, good place to keep my awareness up and learn, and you know, read people. And a big part of my value with that was having a spotting stuff before it happens, being very proactive and all that. So a lot of lessons there and good experiences. Eventually I moved to Los Angeles and was going to do body work, but I was moving because someone else wanted to move, so I went, okay, sure, even though I had a good deal going in Tahoe, and then somebody else wasn't really part of the equation anymore, and I was like, well, I'm here, and at least I get to train at the academy, and so I was doing body work and basically training, like, with you,
right.
20 plus hours a week. I had a part-time job of training,
right,
which was awesome and tons of fun, and I continued to do, during all that time, I continued to do seminars and take seminars, not teach.
Right.
And got the first promotion I ever got in any art was from George and Ness. They gave me my phase one in MKG method certificate. I think it was actually the year Kurt took his first one.
Oh, wow.
Kurt Cornwell.
Kurt's on the shout out. And this concludes the abbreviated version of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast. Please click the like and subscribe buttons, as well as the notification bell. Also consider subscribing to the full-length podcast at www.patreon.com/malmag or purchasing individual full-length episodes at malmag.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Christopher Harley. Coming up next week, a gentle giant, someone that makes me even look short, Nick Hahn. Check out the Malmag store at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and click on the store tab. There, you will find a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Kirby Kerbong, as well as Timmy B's and Dos Manos t-shirts. Many more products coming soon. Also, click on our courses tab to purchase online courses, right now featuring a course in the Dos Manos stick of FMA. More courses to come. This show is produced by Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine. Visit us at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and enjoy the free version of our online magazine with articles, a recommended schools page, and a worldwide events calendar. Music by Jack Al Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.